So do me a favor. If you brought your Bible with you today, make your way to Acts chapter 2. If you didn't bring one with you, there is probably one in the rack in front of you. I'd like you to pull it out and make your way to Acts chapter 2. And while you're turning, you always look at things like that, and you're like, what is he doing? Why that clip? And you have to appreciate, when you do a sermon series like this, you have to go in the right order. You write the sermon first, then you go in quest of the clip that wraps around the sermon. If you go the other way around and you look for a clip and you try to fit the sermon into the clip, then you've missed the point of what's going on. This is not a sermon series about a movie. This is a movie helping us apply principles that we should already understand, principles that we should know. In this case, it's principles about family. Hopefully by now I've yammered enough to give you an opportunity to get where I want you to be. We're going to be reading very familiar verses, verses 42 through 47. They being the church. Okay, so this is the church. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teachings and to fellowship, to the breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe, and many wonders and signs performed by the apostles. All the believers were together and had everything in common. They sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes and ate together with glad and sincere hearts, praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. And the Lord added to their number daily those that were being saved. That, my folks, is an extremely powerful image. Not just of church, it's family. Because that's what church is. And my ultimate blunder that I made this morning, and no, I didn't do that just so I had a sermon illustration. It was honestly an ultimate blunder. We see family connection within our church. Ken and Patty, Brandon, Nancy. As I go through the people around here, there are other connections that fit the members and the people that sit here, but you understand the DNA connection is not the point. It is the connection that is made through who we follow. Through Jesus. So I read these verses in Acts chapter 2, and you're probably trying to think through the clip and saying, okay, how is he going to do this? How do you mesh that chaos with here? Why is this important to today's sermon? It's our mentality. You see, when we think about the term church and what we talk about, what it's like to come for the church. We talk about things like going to, isn't that what we say? I'm going to church. Or attending. I'm attending this. I'm attending an event. I'm attending, I've got a seat. It's a place. It's a spot. When we begin to talk about terms of belonging to a church or being part of a church, we talk about the word joining. I joined the church. I became a member of the church. And the thing is, we get in ourselves in trouble because these words mean different things to different people. When I say church member, depending on how you grew up and how you got to your seat today, it may mean something totally different than how I grew up versus how Dean grew up, versus how Nancy grew up, versus how David grew up, versus how Leslie grew up. We all came from different backgrounds. So what that term member and joining means can get a little subjective. And what we need to understand is that while these terms have their place in our culture, ultimately church is about family. That gets complicated too, right? Because the word family means different things to different people. For some, it means I gave birth to this person. They are part of my family. For some, it means that these are the people that I was birthed into, and I didn't really get to pick them. They're just kind of the people that I had to hang out with when I was growing up. For some of us, family are people that we chose. We chose to have them come into our life. We chose. So this whole idea of family can get complicated when you try to define it. But if you think about family and you peel it all apart and you try to dissect it and analyze it, you're going to eventually come down to one word. What is family about? Isn't it about commitment? Isn't that why we do weddings? So we can stand up in front of people and before people make commitments to the family, make commitments to the relationship. We give things like vows and we exchange rings. When children come into the world, we bring them to church and we do baby dedications to show we are committing ourselves. By the way, baby dedications have nothing to do with the baby. They could care less. And it's really not just a good photo op, you know, where you get a picture, you get to dress the baby in something cute, so you get a cute picture to put in a frame. Baby dedications are about the parents. It is you standing before your church family saying, I am committing myself to raise this child in a way that brings them into a relationship with Christ. And so when you begin to think about that, church isn't about an isolated spiritual achievement or some kind of moment that I have. It is about belonging to a people. And the early church understood this very, very, very deeply. See, that's why Acts uses words like they, everyone, believers, plural, together, and in common. Because you know what? None of those things can you do by yourself. You can't be a they and just be you. That's not how the pronoun works. You can't be believers and it's just you. There's this mutual thing. See, for the early church, it went beyond participation. Okay, the early church was not about I showed up, okay, and I put my effort into whatever the activity or event was. It was beyond attendance. Okay, it wasn't just I have a seat, I have a space, I have a parking lot space, I have this thing that I go and I just kind of wander in and I sit. It went beyond membership. As you read through Scripture, the funny thing is you never really find any verses about church membership. Membership meant that you're a follower of Christ. You just happen to identify with a certain community where you wanted them to take notice of you. Membership is not like joining a health club. That's not what it was all supposed to come down to. See, when I began to look at all of this, it was about, oh, hello, we're having one of those moments. There you go. They saw themselves as, I think I got to clean my buttons. They saw themselves as family. They saw themselves, oh, I got to go back? I did. I got to go, whoa, it really went crazy. There we go. They saw themselves as family. They belonged to it. Did you take a look at the activities there in Acts chapter 2? They shared meals. And I don't mean just the Lord's Supper. They shared meals, so they ate together. It says they gathered daily. You see what's missing? It does not say they gathered on the first day of the week. They gathered daily. They were getting together. They were all in everybody else's business. They opened their homes. They didn't come to a building where they drove to the building and said, here, they said, come to my house. They sacrificed possessions for each other. They were never doing fundraising. They were doing need meeting. What they sold, they had a purpose in what they were selling because they learned that somebody in their family needed something. And so it wasn't about just raising money. It was about family. It was about people. And that's not a social club. But it also wasn't perfect. I mean, we sometimes romanticize Acts chapter 2. We begin to look at it and we just read verses 42 through 47 and we get the impression that it must have just been perfect. No conflict, no disagreements, no headaches. Churchtopia, right? Everybody gets along and everybody's happy and we all gather around the fire and we do our thing and it's just perfect. Let me assure you, they had issues. Now, how do I know that they had issues? Because I wasn't there. I'm not that old, all right? I wasn't around in Acts chapter 2. How do I know that they had issues? Because they had people, right? The only way you can have a church with no issues is if you actually have a building with no people. Because when you bring people into it, people have differences. They have differences in the way that they grew up. They had differences in the kind of music they like. They have differences in the kind of food that they like. They have differences in the way that they like people to dress. They have differences in the way people like people to preach sermons. They have differences. That's the amazing thing about God. He created each and every one of us unique and different. The thing is when you have differences, that invites conflict. Doesn't it? My family has a routine that when I ask the question, I know it's going to end in a very, very long discussion. Would you like to know what the simple conversation is? What would you like for dinner? Nancy mouthed it with me. You've been there, right? You ask that question, and I don't know. So then you start suggesting, no, I don't want that. So you can tell me what you don't want, but you can't tell me what you want. And you have the same problem. You say, well, fine, let's go out to eat. Where do you want to go eat? I don't know. And on and on and on the conversation goes because we are different people. We have our differences, and differences invite the idea of conflict. But what set the early church apart, they never let their differences divide them. Absolutely, I can be different from you. I can have a completely different idea of what church is supposed to be. I can be different, but we're not divided. I'm going to pick on him because Dean and I are probably about as different as we can get when it comes to our church background history. He grew up in an entirely different era, in an entirely different city, in an entirely different lifestyle, and I grew up in crazy land. All right? We are different as we can be. But here we are for 15 years, we're still sitting in the same building, still serving the same God, still working in the same leadership model, and we haven't killed each other, Dean. That's pretty amazing, isn't it? Yeah, have we had our differences over the years? Absolutely. Because we are different. They remain committed to one another. They weren't committed to the building or the address or the name on the sign. They are committed to one another, to this idea of family. They absolutely, positively saw themselves as family. That word that we've been using here was ohana, a word that was used throughout this movie, which brings us back to our clip. Because I can't show the clip and not explain to you how this fits in. That's how these sermons work. And you have to appreciate where we are when that clip shows up. Stitch has begun to change, and you know that because you've been watching along, but Nani still calls him a thing. Lilo doesn't fully see it yet. And after Stitch had his moment last week when he realized he was lost and he cried out when he was lost, the first people that showed up was not family. Oh, no. The first people that showed up were captors. They were not interested in rescuing Stitch. They were interested in locking him up, putting him back in jail, making him go quiet. Their attempt to capture him before we got to this moment destroyed the family home. Large explosion, home is gone. Family, where do you go next? There's no more building. Social services showed up, and Lilo ran because she didn't want to be taken from family. She finds Stitch, and finally, remember, he's looked like a puppy this entire movie. He's hid all of his features that looked alien to make him look as much like a dog as he possibly could. But now she sees his tree form. Six arms, well, four arms, two legs, little antenna things coming out of his. And she does what many of us do when we see different. She blamed him for everything that went wrong. She told him, go away. You're not family anymore. As a matter of fact, you ruined my family. And then right at that very vulnerable moment where you just expect everything to fall apart, well, they don't disappoint, because guess what? It does. Yet another alien shows up, and that alien is trying to also capture Stitch, but in the point of trying to capture Stitch, what ends up happening is they capture Lilo. And they shove her on a ship, and she's gone. That's where our clip picks up today. And where it picks up is kind of chaos. And if you've ever been in the middle of anything, of a family squabble or even a church argument, chaos is a really good word, isn't it? Because look at our little clip. Nani is only interested in one thing. What's her focus? Get her sister back. Is that a bad goal? No. Jumba, he's the big purple dude, okay, that's wielding the laser gun, so he is literally laser-focused on capturing Stitch. That's what I was sent here to do, was to capture the abomination, the thing, and lock it away. Bleakley, our comic relief, he's just interested in preventing collateral damage. Don't engage her. Don't talk to her. That's a misuse of galactic resources. You can't do that. He's just interested in, I guess, we could call it the law. And then we look at Stitch, and Stitch stands there, and he begins to just watch the family fall apart. It's a sad moment. I mean, why is this happening? It's easy for us to see when we look at the clip. When we look at the church, sometimes we can't see it. But when you look at that clip, you can see this. The problem is everyone has a mission, but nobody has the same mission. Ugh, that hurts. Everybody in that group is on a mission, and nobody's mission is necessarily wrong. They just don't have the same mission. They're looking at themselves until the little monster, the thing, 626, the abomination, the one that was not created for family, was created for total destruction. He steps forward and delivers the line. It's a line that usually we've heard out of Lilo's mouth. This is the very first time Stitch says it, of Hana. Ohana means family, and family means nobody gets left behind. That's how we've heard it to this point. Stitch adds, or forgot. Nobody in a family gets left behind or forgot. And when we begin to think about that, we have to put that in perspective. Ohana means we are committed to each other. This is family. This is who we're supposed to belong to. Did you notice what happened next in that clip? The moments before, everybody's fighting, everybody's shouting, everybody's acting out of fear, pride, or just utter confusion. But the moment Stitch reframed everything around this idea of family, wow. The chaos turned to unity. The competing agendas began to disappear one by one. And that's exactly how it works in the biblical community. You see, when we go back and we look at Acts chapter 2, they didn't gather because they agreed on anything. If that is your perception of church, then you stopped at Acts chapter 2 and you failed to read the rest of Acts. They had disagreements. They had arguments. Peter and Paul just about had a knockdown, drag-out fight. It's all in there. Nobody tried to cover it up and make it perfect. Church was designed to be family, and families have their differences, their arguments, their struggles. They gathered because they were committed to one another. They kept coming back, not because I'm happy, but because, you know what? This is family. And most of the time, you don't walk away from family. You may have to take some breaks from family sometimes. You may have to go and collect yourself and gather yourself, but you know what? When the push comes to shove, family will pull back together. It's the unfamily that begins to fall apart. See, they just committed naturally, and that led them to one thing. They had a shared mission. The early church, Acts chapter 2, had a shared mission. Every family, I don't care whether it's biological or church or whatever you want to wrap that term around, every family shares a purpose bigger than itself. The moment the family is just about the family, we end up with issues, don't we? We have purposes that are beyond us. One of the main purposes of family is to grow the family, right? That's why we have kids. This is the reason we let kids marry our kids marry other people's kids. I don't want my kids to marry my own kids. I want them to go marry other people. They're designed to grow the family, and hopefully, eventually, they produce more kids, and so on it goes. See, that's what family is about. That's why you see the idea right there in Acts. All the believers were together and had everything in common. So they shared common territory, common ground, common connection, but it doesn't mean that they had no issues. They were united because they were committed to, again, one another. Go ahead and read through Paul's letters and start counting how many times he uses that term, one another, one another. Pray with one another. Encourage one another. Help one another. Give grace to one another. Forgive one another. Over and over and over again. Another, one another, one another. That is, he's obsessed with this term because he read Acts chapter 2. See, when we begin to take this apart, commitment creates belonging, and mission then gives belonging direction. And when the mission becomes clear, well, I mean, when Ohana becomes real, that's where our mission begins to become clear. So, church, what's the mission? Seriously, what's the mission of the church? And I know what you're thinking. Here it comes. We're going to Matthew chapter 20. Not going there. We'll reference it here in just a little bit. But I want to start with telling you what the mission is not. Because we confuse this. The mission is not about performance inside the family. If that's what you think the mission is, you are setting yourself up to have nothing but conflict. See, when the church begins to look at Acts chapter 2, we often define mission by listing the activities. Teaching, fellowship, worship, service, outreach, that's the mission, right? Absolutely, positively not. These are necessary God-given rhythms of the church, but they're not the mission. And if these activities become the mission, then the mission becomes about me. Don't believe me? Me improving. Me learning. Me serving. Me worshiping. Please, oh please, structure things so that it works for me. And when it becomes about that, you get the consequences. We fight for ourselves. Division naturally occurs. Separation happens. Family is lost in the chaos. We're just so busy trying to win that we fail. So we have to rescope mission, and if you want to understand mission of the church, stop staring at the action and just start looking at the target. Can you see it? Can you see the target? It's not about programming. It's not about the church calendar, okay? It's not about the building. It's that word. That word says, Ohana. And that's exactly why the reason Jesus gave us the Great Commission. Not just to give us more things to do. Anybody need something else on their calendar to do? You've got way too much free time on your hands? I don't have this issue. It wasn't just so we could go baptize and teach, but so we could bring more people into the family. Think back to that chaotic clip that I showed you at the beginning. Unity happened when the focus shifted to the one in need, did it not? As soon as she could get the message across, this is not about what you want, this is about Lilo, my sister, the one that's been taken, the one that I'd really like to have back. And then just understand, the people in the church, they were praying. They were worshiping. They were serving. But just like the clip, the actions were aimed at meeting real needs. The family. And welcoming new people into the family. Go back and read Acts chapter 2. That was the goal of teaching, worshiping, fellowship, serving, and outreach, was so that the family needs could be met and so that the family could grow. See, when the mission became clear, the very first thing Stitch had to do was make peace with Nani. Restored unity. Next, did y'all catch it? This is kind of like that comic moment. The family expanded. Two new members of the family. And these weren't just any members. These are the people that just a few minutes before were trying to lock Stitch up and throw away the key. They recruited adversaries? We have a word for that. It's called forgiveness. They welcomed the people that were trying, they felt were trying to rip the family apart. They welcomed them in. And as soon as those people joined the family, you saw what happened, right? Their mission changed from capture to rescue. Wow. That's somewhat impressive, isn't it? And what did that take? 2 minutes of a Disney clip? We can figure this out in 2 minutes when we watch a cartoon, but we can't figure it out when we sit here and look at one another. That's kind of hard. So let's just make it really simple. When the mission is about people, all the actions that we do actually make sense. And when the actions begin to make sense, we begin to produce things like compassion, obedience, loving sacrifice, presence, and there's our word. Family. And that's the point at which we stop imitating the characteristics of Jesus and start imitating the character of Jesus. The moment it turns toward people. I guess the question that our church and churches all across America have to begin to ask is, do you want to be that kind of church? And where do you start? How do you fix this? What is the idea behind this thing that we call missional Ohana? By the way, missional means that you have to have an attitude and a mindset that you're on a mission. That's all it means. It's not a complicated word. You have a mission in your heart. How do we do that? Refuse to fight each other. Does that mean we're going to all get along? No, please, no. But it means we turn arguments into intercession. You ever try to be mad at somebody you're praying for? It's really, really hard. As a matter of fact, I would say it's almost impossible. It's the first thing, if I'm going to be mad at you, I have to do is I have to shut off the prayer. Because God isn't going to leave me alone. He's going to keep after me. We have to refuse it. We can't fight. Because if we're busy trying to make the church what I want it to be, it'll never be what God designed it to be. Family. So after we decide we're going to stop fighting with each other, we have to turn our focus and identify the one who's in need. Think about that for a second. Think about our own family, our own church, the struggles that we see, and begin asking your question. Look around. Who's missing? Who's slipping? Who's hurting? Who's being spiritually taken? See, these questions begin to ask ourselves, not how do I make the church work for me? How do I go after that member of my family that, you know what, I haven't seen in a bit? That my heart is being called toward. After we do that, it isn't just enough to identify them, folks. You have to move toward the hurting, not away. Our first inclination when we see hurting, when we see chaos, when we see destruction, is run. As far as away you can from that situation, just run. Because I don't want to be hurt. But that's not what God said. God said, when you see the disaster, like a fireman or a first responder, especially when it's inside your family, you're supposed to run to it. You're supposed to go looking for all of this. You're supposed to show up. Check in. Carry burdens. Be present. Isn't that what families do? Again, we have our differences. We have our moments. When really, we don't want to be anywhere near our family. But you can't last that way forever, right? You're not designed to be that way. That's not how God built you. So now when we're talking about our church, we have one more step. And this is an important step. And I think a lot of times we trunk it at the first three. We just try to pour ourselves into helping all the broken people in our church. And you know what that leads to? I have a really biblical word for that. It's called exhaustion. Okay? You've met all the needs you can, and you've got nothing left in the tank, and you're still trying to go, and you're just like, and exhaustion leads to frustration. Frustration leads to differences. Differences ends up, I get irritated, and then I start arguing, and then we're right back where we started. So we've got to include this last step if we're going to actually make a church into a family. Unite spiritually. So that means you pray not just for, with. When somebody says, I sure could use you to pray for me, you don't say, I'll put that on my list and do it later. How about we stop right then and say, let's pray. Done. We've engaged God into our issue. Sometimes that leads to having to stand in the gap, which means that you have to become the person that becomes between that person and the conflict. That doesn't sound very good. That sounds like a horrible idea. Sometimes that's what you have to do. Sometimes, and this is a word that I'm working on, I'm researching, I'm thinking, because it bothers me, sometimes we have to do this thing called fasting. That doesn't sound like fun at all. Well, you realize what fasting is, right? Fasting is not so you can starve yourself or lose weight. Fasting is you skip a meal and you take the time that you would have spent feeding yourself and you go out and you pray for the other person that you're trying to get fed. It gives you some urgency and some focus. And then, of course, we also have to end this with some loving sacrifice. Am I good at any of these? Do I understand their need? Does Satan still come after me? Because he doesn't want us to understand. Remember the mission. Ohana means nobody gets left behind or forgotten. And that's hard. That's not what I want. Ohana actually happens when we go after the one who needs rescuing. Not because the danger disappears. Not because the personalities suddenly fit and I like you now. Not because the problem just went away. Oftentimes this is very messy business, folks. It might take a lot of prayer. It might take a lot of conflict. It might take a lot of addressing. But because the family decided Lilo must be rescued, our clip takes our movie in an entirely different direction, which you'll have to come back next week to see where we're going next. Today I want to just leave you with some thoughts. What if every time someone in this congregation was hurting, we rallied instead of retreated? What would that look like? What if every time someone was taken by fear or sin or shame, instead of passing judgment, we said, not on our watch. Not in our heart. We're not going to let you have them, at least not without a really good fight. Not a fight with them, but a fight for them. See, that's exactly what Jesus teaches when he goes into that idea of leaving 99 to go after one. He had 99 sheep. What good is the one? It's probably the troublemaker anyway. Just let it go. Right? Your sheep flock will be happier. What if you're the one? Oh, wait a minute. I remember being the one. I remember the moment. I remember my lost moment. And that inspires me to say, you know what, as bad as sometimes I don't want to, sometimes I have to. I have to look at the person that's missing from my family and say, let's go get them. Let's go rescue. Let's not condemn. Let's look at the idea of Ohana. And when you break this apart, Ohana means family. Family means commitment to the one to one another and compassion for the one who needs to be rescued.